Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
You are what you eat, and you are what you eat, eats. And you're even what you eat, eats, eats.
Welcome to Local Food Connections, a show about the power of locally grown food to connect us more strongly with our communities and the lands we inhabit. The show promotes sustainable food systems that foster community resilience and empower individuals to make positive choices for themselves, their communities and their environment. Local Food Connections is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We're broadcasting from Wurundjeri country and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. We respect the enduring strength of First Nations people and acknowledge their long heritage of agriculture and care for the land on which we live. Today, it is my pleasure to chat with Morag Gamble. Morag is zooming in from Mullaney, Queensland, where she's director of the Permaculture Education Institute, which offers online permaculture courses, among other things, and which she founded. Morag's been practicing permaculture for over 30 years and is a prominent figure in the global permaculture movement. You can find out all you need to know about Morag and her work at the YouTube channel Our Permaculture Life. And if you want to go deeper by listening to her podcast, this is called Sense Making in a Changing World and has interviews with leading ecological thinkers and activists from around the globe. Now, what's really exciting, apart from having Morag on the show, because I've been following Morag for a long time, so it's great to actually meet her, but she is hosting a six-day free global and online festival on permaculture and building regenerative community, and that's from the 20th to the 25th of May. It's the third international festival of wild and kind ideas. This event has, as I said, has been running for 3 years, and it's a great lineup of guests, very inspiring thinkers and creatives from around the world, exploring wild and kind responses to today's ecological and social challenges. The event's free because the Permaculture Education Institute has donated its platforms and the hosts and all the guests are here in the gift economy. So welcome, Morag.
Thank you, Anne. It's lovely to be here.
I want to start off talking about that the gift economy and the decision to make such an amazing lineup of people over that number of days free for participants. Talk to me about that, if you will. Mm.
The work that I do in permaculture is something that has global reach, and in actual fact, it's something that I feel is super necessary everywhere around the world. Last night I was just on a call. I work a lot with young refugee folks in various camps across Uganda and Kenya, and so we had a call last night. One of the programs that we're able to raise some funds for. They designed this program, creating their own young permaculture champions who are taking it out to the next communities, It's just like myceliating. So the point of making this free as an event is that people don't have to ask, oh, please, may I have a free ticket? Like, it's free for everyone. And then if you're able to, I invite people to donate. And those donations are then collected by a registered charity that I run, and 100% of that is sent back across to various projects around the world. It's kind of like a trust-based humanitarian permaculture fair share program. So the point is, I think, is that the kind of knowledge systems and the kind of ideas that are being explored in the world need to move. They need to move fast. They need to move far. There needs to be no guardrails on this. We need to all be able to access and to be able to come in and talk to one another so that you can be sitting in a room in this festival with a professor from Palestine who's setting up the Natural History Museum and tending to gardens there in the emergency, while also talking with Nora Bates, and leading ecological thinker of our time, and an incredible young woman from a refugee settlement in Uganda. We just get to start to have these conversations across the world in ways that helps us all to make better sense of it and how we can begin to sort of shift into this. And so that's why I do it for free, because trying to work out how to charge for some people and not for other people and make it accessible for some and not make people feel like, oh, I have to ask. I have digital platforms because I run online courses. I run online permaculture teacher courses, permaculture design, permaculture leadership, communication, gardening, all those things I run online. So I have the platforms.
Mm-hmm.
It costs me nothing else to offer a free festival on those. So mm-hmm. it's sort of like, well, it's there. Why not make the most of having those digital tools at my fingertips?
Yeah, and I think we can have faith and trust that in a bunch of participants committed to fair share, because that's one of the three permaculture foundational ethics, fair share. Amongst that group, people will donate.
Mm.
So
and
you'll
some
get,
people won't, some people
yeah,
will, and I just
fine.
Really love it when people do, because you know that it's 100% going across. I'm just sort of like the conduit, and they go to projects. They don't go to organizations that take out their venue bits and their, you know, organizational structure. They go to people. It's a people-to-people gifting. So there's lots of relationality that's been formed over years of young champions, young permaculture champions, they call themselves, who are refugees themselves, who are seeing what's going on in their community, knowing that the general aid that comes in is not helping. And in actual fact, a lot of the food aid that comes is the worst food of the worst food that's sent off, and often moldy, or they have to sort of wash it and dry it in the middle of a dusty road. They want to be able to grow their own food and create their own space. So they're designing their own healthy nutritional programs that are community-led, aid, you know, giving agency to their own community, focusing on young mothers and, you know, elderly. Like, they are designing these programs, and so we just stay in communication through the education program, so anyone from those communities can get free access to all of my courses as well. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the schools in refugee settlements are, you know, very basic, so really mm-hmm. trying to create those possibilities and then supporting them in lots of different ways. So platforming their voice. And so that's why they're here, to be able to share their story about, well, what is real aid? What is really needed in these places? And then we can start to create this sort of collaboration, rather than it being a, you know, we design a program and we'll apply it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if people feel that that's important, then they donate.
Yeah, absolutely. And what a antidote to the horrific experiences people have been through, to especially young people, an antidote to the inevitable trauma and cynicism that must form in their minds to see that there's another way.
Yeah.
So it's directly related to peace and that word cooperation and kindness.
I really could have called this festival the Festival of Peace and Love. I don't know.
I could have, I know.
But I call it the International Festival of Wild and Kind Ideas. So last year's, it was the International Festival of Wild Ideas, really looking at how we address, you know, the biodiversity loss, how we come together. Like, really, in actual fact, I think permaculture is a movement of really finding ourselves back into what it means to live in, you know, in life, that we are nature, and how does everything we do increase the possibilities for life to life, you know, rather than this sort of deadening that we're seeing around us. So I kind of foregrounded wilding. The year before, it was just ideas. It's like, let's just crack open the imagination. Like, let's see what's possible. What are we thinking that's sort of not in the normal scripted dialogues that we hear in all the different movements? Like, it's just starts to get a bit dry. So let's just crack that open. So it was the Festival of Ideas, then the Festival of Wild Ideas. And, well, given the context of what's happening in the world and the war and the violence that's going on, it's like, let's really think and be present in this kind of thing of, like, how do we be humankind? Like, bring the kindness back into what it means to be human. My son just turned 18 this year. My eldest son just turned 18 this year. I was having a chat with him. I said, "Oh, what's it like to be 18 now?" You know, like just having a chat. And he said, "Mum, well, I was excited about it. I was really looking forward to it. But you know what it means now? I could get drafted." And I just like,
Oh, is that what he
oh, my
thought? Oh, God.
my stomach hit the floor. And so that's what he and his mates are talking about. Like,
Well,
what happens?
my son's 28. That's so, and when I ask him a question like that, he says, "I don't know if you understand the depth of hopelessness in my generation." Isn't that appalling?
It's devastating.
Can you
And
talk
so
us
I said,
through
well,
like?
what will you,
No, you go. Keep going.
oh yeah. So I just said, like, and before I could ask him any more questions, he says, "Don't worry though, Mum. My mates and I've already got it worked out. We know where we're going. We've got it planned. We're going out bush. We're just going to survive." And I just went, "Good on you, mate. Like, how can I help you? You know, like, if you need any help, just let me know." And so what they're looking at is how they can know how to live off the land. And they're already very practical young people. So, like, the kind of skills and resilience and feeling secure is not about having the house and the money. It's about knowing how to live and grow and fix stuff and make stuff and navigate and all those things. It's horrifying. It's absolutely horrifying. I don't know why I'm laughing, because when he said that, I never thought about that. But it's obviously a big thing in their minds. And you know, I didn't intend to homeschool my kids, but it ended up happening just because they kind of fell out of love with school, and we went on adventures and did all sorts of things together. And one of the things that I noticed that really sparked that older son in particular was about making and fixing vehicles. And so as soon as he got that, from being a bit lost, his whole world comes around that. And my daughter, on the other hand, was really focused on social activism, and so she got out in the streets and started becoming part of the activism movement and organizing things behind the scenes. And she and I had been working together since she was about 12, organizing international PermaYouth movement things, which ended up sort of myceliating into the refugee communities, which is how that started. So right from that early age, she had that sense of, like, oh, if you just step into things and really show up and be present, who knows what'll happen? You can't kind of have this linear plan of, we're going to go from A to B, and this is the strategy we'll get to make change. It's like, and this is one of the things that Nora Bateson talks about, who's one of my guests at the festival, is that we need to shift away from this sense of being change makers into creating the context within which change can happen. And that is a lot through conversation, creating a sense of warmth and calm, where we can shift away from our scripts and really be uniquely you and me, and we can step into this space and share our stories. And in the sharing of the stories, new meaning making happens. And you leave those conversations. It's not like we're going to come away from this conversation with a set of outcomes ticked off, and right, we did that, we did that, we did that. But what I will walk away from this with, like, it'll seep, and later on the day they'll be like, oh, that's right, we talked about that. And it gradually seeps into your elbows and your knees. And then the next conversation I have will be infused by my interaction with you. And then the next, but so it just keeps seeping. And what she talks about is this sense that we need to really focus on what is submerging. You know, we often talk about in systems thinking and change, like the emergence of this and the emergence of that. But something emerging can only happen when there's a lot of submergence that's going on, and noticing too, what are the ghosts and how you tend those, and being really present in the unseen. And it's a very sort of anti-hero way of operating. It's very much about going into the soil and the compost and the digestion of the conversations, and being really present and being really humble and noticing. Really noticing and tending, and where you see an aliveness happening, like I was talking about with my son. He got really into fixing and making things. So I added compost to that particular passion that he had. I sort of helped to make it more possible. And so that's the thing, like, if we notice where we see the sparks of aliveness, and it could be anything, anywhere, That's and what we pay our attention to is what grows as well, because all of our worlds are this collection of what we pay attention to. So, you know, this relates to everything from how we tend to our local food systems, to how we tend to our local community neighborhoods, to how we're focusing on our local economic systems. And there's no one solution anywhere. It's about all of us really being present in that and recognizing that there's this sort of mycelial web of relationships of all these good actors everywhere around the world. You know, people say, oh, but what I do, my little bit is not good enough. No, it is. It's absolutely is, because every single positive action that's put in the world, like every act of love and kindness, matters, and it shifts everything.
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
Over five decades, we've been home to hundreds of shows, thousands of broadcasters and guests, and hundreds of thousands of listeners.
This February, we're aiming for 1,000 subscribers.
It's just $40 concession, $80 full.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
Australia's energy market is broken.
Right, but CoPower gives you better energy?
Nope, no retailer can control where the electrons they buy off the grid come from. But as a CoPower member, you can vote on where 100% of revenue goes. So instead of corporate profit, your energy bill builds the world you want to be a part of.
That's cool.
Learn more about the solidarity economy and CoPower today and take the power back.
Victorian energy fact sheets and basic plan information documents are available at cooperativepower.org.au. For clear advice on the right plan for you, contact us on 03 9068 6036.
A 3CR supporter.
This is the Local Food Connection. So on 3CR 855 kilohertz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio, you can visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show. Today I'm chatting with the delightful Morag Gamble, who's talking about myceliating ideas all over the globe and bringing people together to talk about what are all the different ways through the crises that we are facing. I'm just watching Morag, and she's using her fingers like the mycelium that's underneath the soil with all the fungi and everything. And I'm thinking, how do I jump onto this carnival of ideas that she's just presented, because I've got so many ideas. But one thing I do want to say is that addiction to dot points and outcomes, and the belief that you can just make a decision that you're going to put this into practice and then this is going to happen, is to me such a fallacy and at the bottom of so much failure in policy and war and this idea that you can just engineer things to be the way you want them. It's not like that. It is wild, isn't it? And I think that's one idea I came up with, but I didn't come up with it. I got from listening to you. But the other one is the hope that I get from when it comes down to it, no matter how destructive we get and how murderous we are, in the case of war, for example, the only thing it comes back to is people cooperating to help each other. So it doesn't matter how trivial or how deep the crisis is that you're in. That's all we've got, is that love and kindness. This isn't a small thing. This is not fluffy stuff.
It's
this is
not
the
fluffy
real
stuff.
Thing that keeps us alive and keeps us going.
Yeah. And I used to maybe try and avoid it, thinking that it was I would be fluffified and dismissed as
feminine.
Oh, that's just too soft.
Just a hippie. Yeah.
Yeah. You're just one of those hippie people who live in an eco village and you're just talking about peace, love, and whatever.
Yeah.
But honestly, wherever I look and in all the conversation I'm having with leading ecological and system thinkers of our time, it all comes back to this.
Yeah,
it all comes back to us being present in our places, being present in our communities, being able to show up with that sense of love and kindness and sharing. And, you know, I was even listening to, what was it, Hugh Mackay, you know, the Australian sort of social scientist.
Yeah,
and he was talking up in Mullaney a little while ago. It's a book that came out, and he was doing his book tour, and he was talking about how in Australia there is an epidemic of loneliness. And I think this is an epidemic of loneliness that is around the world. In fact, as we isolate into, you know, atomize into our sort of independent homes beyond communities and neighborhoods. And one of the things he was saying that the epidemic of loneliness is damaging to our health as smoking a pack of cigarettes a day.
Yep.
Now, so what is the antidote to loneliness? Well, it's love and care and kindness and sharing and reaching out and presencing yourself and you know, offering an invitation. And this is the other thing that I think is really important is when I first started being an activist, I was, you know, and this is in my teenage years, it was, you know, like the fighting. I was on the streets of Melbourne and all the peace rallies and all that, but I was actually fighting, you know.
It was like anger and excitement.
You know, like the angry activist and, you know, the rage. And we need the rage. We need to feel the rage. But what do we do with it after the rage has subsided, or after, or even while we're holding the rage here, we need something else to wrap it around so that we can move forward with that rage. And I never want to let go of that rage. I feel like there's a fire within me that burns really brightly as the, like an outrage at what's going on in society, and that fuels how, but I don't show up in my relationality with the people around me and my neighbors and the people I want to work with that sense of rage. Mm-hmm. It's with that humility and love and kindness and an invitation to come and play. Like, play, this yes. sounds very childish, but in actual fact, I think it is one of the most profound things that I've learned over the last 30 odd years, that the invitation, so that we open up an invitation to come and play. And by play, I mean be creative, to see what's possible, to imagine possible futures, to see, it's not like, okay, this is my idea and come over to my place and do what I say. It's like, all right, let's get together and see what we are going to do. And it's really that shift from the me to the we, and not having an outcome and not trying to make it too efficient. Actually, the more meandering the journey, the more rich it becomes and the more nutrients we pick up along the way, and it shapes and deepens. And like in permaculture, we have this sort of concept about rehydration of the landscape, of mm-hmm. slow spread, sink and store the water. And that really helps to rehydrate the land, which brings it all up. That's what we need to do in our social scene. We need to slow it, spread it, sink it, and then really get, you know, store more of that social capital mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. our landscapes. Mm-hmm. And so that to me is really important, being an invitational being and opening up, like, I don't have all the answers. I just have lots of questions, and I have a lot of, you know, heart to want to be part of being this. I had a sticker on my helmet at high school. I was at high school in the 80s. I think I was the only kid who had a helmet on. My dad was a road safety person. So
was it one of the yellow helmets?
It was actually, I think it was a white sort of bucket head sort of thing.
Yep,
but to make it kind of a little bit more interesting, I put all these different stickers all over. And it was, you know, one of them was like, you know, if you're not looking for a solution, you're part of the problem. Yeah. That kind of sort of things are save the whales and all these things that I somehow intuited were important, but I don't know whether I really understood the depth of what that meant. I don't think it was. I was actually out in near Kigari, Fraser Island, about a year or so ago, on a little boat with a friend. They have this little trailer sailor thing that they need to pay for their fees at the thing, so they take friends out to go out for a play. Anyway, we're out swimming and these whales came up to us. It's a little boat about the size of a whale, and the whales came up and they were like coning right beside the boat, and we were just floating out in the middle of this,
oh my god, like
nowhere, and they started coming up and they were diving under the boat. Here's me doing the arms again. I know no one can see this. They were diving under the boat and they were like centimeters away from us. I was there with my two sons and my husband as well, and we just looked at each other and we went, yeah, come on. So we just kind of like took off our outer layers of clothes and slipped into the water with them, and I just went underwater and I swam around for as long as I hold my breath and came up again. And then this one whale came around and just was so close, and she stopped. I say she because it felt like a she. I don't know. She stopped within hand's reach away, eyeball to eyeball, and just stopped there. And for what felt like an absolute eternity, mm-hmm. I was held in the gaze of this great being, and I could feel the clicks of communication. I don't know what she said, but I felt I knew what she said. And there was some sense of like, we are kin. We are here to be, you know, in service of life. Let's take deep care of the oceans, of the land, the, you know, everything. And so I, those sort of moments are profound. And so the kind of fight that I have is more about being in awe, being in wonder, showing love, inviting people in to play and create what we can do together. And you know, one of the simplest things that I always find that is that does that without friction is food, which is why I've always focused on food systems.
Because tell us about the household that you've created and that your son grew up in. Please. So you tell us about your permaculture life. Anchor us in that.
So, about 28 years ago, I moved to Crystal Waters Permaculture Village, which is an eco-village designed using the principles of permaculture. It's about 650 acres. There's 83 households here. I was studying landscape architecture and urban planning design at Melbourne Uni, and I'd been watching this place in the early 80s starting to get developed. And eventually I came up here after traveling around the world looking at all these different eco-villages and projects and studying at Schumacher College, and I finally got around to coming here to check it out and actually to do a permaculture course. I thought, okay, right, now is the time to do that. And just so happens I met this amazing guy called Evan, who is now my husband. We've been together for 30-odd years. And after coming back, we went to Brisbane, started up the Northeast Street City Farm together with a group of people. And after 5 years or so of doing that, there was an invitation to come and teach permaculture here at the Ecovillage. So everything kind of aligned so that it worked out that we could buy a block here. Honestly, it was $43,000 to buy a 1 acre block, which meant we get a share of the forest and the rivers and the community facilities. So we had nothing. We were volunteering around the world doing permaculture work, but we managed to scrabble together from friends and family enough to get this started. And then we built our place over the next decade, bit by bit. So debt-free household in an eco-village. We have 1 acre that's ours, so there's no fences. The kangaroos and wallabies, like the little wallaby out here with a little baby in a pouch, I can see. So it's a wildlife place. It's a community place. It's food just falling from the trees, basically. You know, that's the point. You know, we just create food forest around us. So he
deep
grew up
soil,
in a house that
deep soil too.
Well, there wasn't a whole lot. Because we're all on the best soil is on the river flats, which no building happens on that because it's protected because it's agricultural land. And so the best agricultural land was left for that. The high slopes were left for the forest. And the mid slopes facing towards the sun is where the house lots are. So we had good solar access for solar and for the gardens. So yeah, we've had to build up the soil over time, and it's working really really beautifully. But I have to say that, you know, the thing about growing up in a place like this, I'm not necessarily teaching about this, but it is just infused in the everyday. So, you know, they use a compost loo and all the food scraps, they know where they go back out to the worm farm or the garden. And you know, I realized how infused it is when I so we have the chickens, and he goes up and collects. My oldest son is like 6'3" and he's built, and he likes to eat lots of protein. So we have chickens here, and he goes up and collects them. And he came back one day and he said, "Mum, I reckon you need to get a little bit more grit for the chickens because the eggs, I don't think they're as strong as what they were before." And I went, "Great, thanks, darling, I'll do that," because I'd never taught him that. I don't know where he picked that bit. Maybe he was listening because we have camps coming through here and groups and all the, and it just infuses into his world.
This is the first part of a two-part interview with Morag, and the next part will be next week. Morag, he is hosting a six-day global and online festival on permaculture and building regenerative community, and that's from the 20th to the 25th of May. It's the third international festival of wild and kind ideas. The event's free because the permaculture hosts and all the guests are here in the gift economy. If you'd like to sign up for that, just go to permacultureeducationinstitute.org/festival2026 and you'll be able to get yourself a free pass for this event with a truly spectacular lineup. Until next week, love the land you're on, share your surplus and take care of each other. Remember, if you want to support independent media, you can become a 3CR subscriber. Stay tuned now to 3CR for more radical radio with Latin American Update. Bye for now.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.